Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl from Deviant Legion and ISF podcast, and nice to have you with us. Unfortunately, my co-host, Rachel, will not be with us today. She had a minor emergency, but everything should be okay, so that'll be fine. But we are very, very welcome to we're very, very proud to welcome first our guest panelist, who will be here for a few moments, and that's Joey Vento. Joey, nice to have you.
Thanks. I love coming on your shows. I came on to see Sam. Listen to Sam.
well, yes, I know that. But you get a section too, you know. But yes, we are very, very welcome. Our special guest tonight is Sam Ervin. Sam Ervin has directed several films, including one that just got a 4K restoration and is out on Blu-ray, and that would be Elvira's Haunted Hills. And I'd like to welcome to our show Sam Ervin. Sam, nice to have you with us.
Hey, Carl. It's nice to be back. I'm really excited.
Yeah. Yeah,
today's a big day. The Blu-ray for Elvira's today.
It's the day that Elvira's Haunted Hills is out for sale. So tell us how that all came up, Sam.
Well, it's actually the 20th anniversary. It's hard for me to even believe that we made this film 20 years ago because it feels like yesterday. And it was the most fun I've ever had directing a movie. It was just fabulous. We shot it in Romania. Actually, some of the locations were in Transylvania, and we did all the studio work in Bucharest. And the movie did not get much of a release at the time, and it not promoted very well on video, DVDs and stuff either. And so I am really, really hopeful that this Blu-ray release will actually not only introduce the movie to a whole new generation of fans, but, you know, actually find people who missed it, you know, 20 years ago. And I think it's kind of this little lost, you know, I am so partial to it. I mean, I know I'm biased, but I feel like it's this little lost gem that slipped through the cracks. It's a spoof of the Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe, Roger Corman movies. And Cassandra Peterson, who is Elvira, and I both were very good friends of Vincent Price in real life. And he had passed away by the time this film was made, but we dedicated the film to him. And it's our love letter to him. In the same way that Mel Brooks made Young Frankenstein as a love letter to the Universal Frankenstein movies, this is our love letter to the Price, Corman, Poe movies. And you know, if you know Pit and the Pendulum and House of Usher and Haunted Palace and all of those, they are spoofed directly in this movie. I mean, we have a pit and a pendulum. And now, the way that I got this gig to direct, I had known Cassandra for a bit. She had played a small part in one of my movies called Acting on Impulse with Nancy Allen and Linda Fiorentino. We were friends and everything. And she had told me that she wanted to consider me to direct an Elvira film if they ever got a second one going. Well, several years went by and she called up and she said, okay, nobody wants to do an Elvira movie. So my husband and I are going to frickin' finance the thing ourselves. And we're meeting with directors, come over, and I always told you I wanted you to be considered, and come over and meet with us. So I went over, she handed me the script, and she said, okay, this is Elvira's Haunted Hills, it's a spoof of the Vincent Price, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies, are you familiar with those? And I'm like, Cassandra, this is Vincent Price's monologue from the climax of Pit and the Pendulum. Do you know where you are, Bartolomei? You are about to enter hell. Hell, the Neverworld, the Infernal Region, the Abode of the Damned, a place of torment, Gehenna, Naraka, the Pit, and the Pendulum, the razor edge of destiny. Thus, the condition of man bound on an island from which he can never or hope to escape, surrounded by the waiting pit of hell, which must destroy him finally. And she looked at me like I was crazy and said, "You're hired." And now, how did I know that? Okay, going all the way back to junior high school, my teacher said that, you know, they wanted all the students to memorize monologues and perform them for the class. And, you know, they're thinking like Shakespeare, you know, I'm sorry, I'm allergic to iambic pentameter. So I wanted to do, and I raised my hand and I knew I had to say something academic or it wouldn't be allowed. So I said, could I do Edgar Allan Poe? And the teacher thought for a second and said, okay, yeah. So I raced home, knowing full well that the monologue in that movie was written by the screenwriter, Richard Matheson, and not Edgar Allan Poe. But I was certainly not going to ask to do Richard Matheson. So, and back in those days, this was when I was probably 13 or something, and you know, I was born in 1956, so we're talking, you know, late 60s, and this is long before home video and stuff like that. So I recorded on the audio on reel-to-reel tape movies off of TV, and I had Pit in the Pendulum on a reel-to-reel tape, just the audio. So I raced home, transcribed the whole thing, memorized it, went to class, got an A. She never suspected for a second that it wasn't Edgar Allan Poe. And then a couple years after that, I went to see – I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, but I convinced my mom to drive me down to Atlanta, Georgia. It was a four-hour drive to go see Vint Price in Oliver, like a summer stock production of Oliver that was playing in Atlanta. And he was playing Fagin, the head, you know, the guy who head of all the pickpocket boys. And so, and this was the very first time I met Vincent Price, is we went to the stage door afterwards, and I had, my dad owned movie theaters. I had organized a whole Vincent Price kitty matinee retrospective on Saturday mornings leading up to the first run of Dr. Five, the Abominable Dr. Fives. And so we had shown like a whole bunch of Vincent Price movies, and I had created these flyers and stuff. So when I met him, I showed him the flyer and I told him that we were, you know, we're running his movies, and he was all impressed with that. When I told him my name was Sam Ervin, there was a very famous North Carolina senator back in those days, Senator Sam Ervin. He spelled it E-R-V-I-N, I-R-V-I-N, but it's spelled the same way. But he was also head of the Watergate Committee and had quite a national profile. And so when I said I was Sam Ervin from North Carolina, Vincent Price, who, you know, was very learned and, you know, certainly knew about politics and everything, immediately went, "Oh, my gosh, are you related to the senator from North Carolina?" And I said, "No, he spells it differently," all that. But it was enough to make an impression on him for him to remember my name. And so then I told him that I was such a fan, I had memorized the monologue from Pit in the Pendulum. And he said, "You did not." And I said, "Yes, I did." And I did it for him right there. And the other fans that were waiting to talk to him, who were probably getting really mad that I was taking so long, they ended up applauding when I got done with the thing. So yeah, I made an impression. And then the next time I saw Vincent Price was a few months later. He was doing a lecture tour and came to a town in North Carolina, and I again got driven there to go see that and went to see him afterwards, and he remembered me. And so that's how we sort of became friends, because I was basically a stalker. And but I knew that monologue from way back then, and it just has always stuck with me, and it got me the job to direct Elvira's Haunted Hill. So anyway, that's a long story, but that's how that all came about. And it was really, it feels so amazing that I was, you know, able to get the job on that movie because of that monologue, but I had also performed that monologue for Mr. Price, you know, so it's a pretty special stuff. thing.
That is special.
So,
yeah.
So, Tilly, I was just going to ask, I know you can't really stay with us. You're not feeling real well. Do you have a question for Sam before you go?
Yeah. You've known Cassandra for how many years, Sam?
This is our 30th year. I met her.
Wow.
My first feature film was Guilty as Charged, which was released in 91. And I went to, shortly after it was released, I went to a party that was thrown by Terry Sweeney, who used to be a regular on Saturday Night Live. He was the first openly gay cast member, and he always did Nancy Reagan in drag really famously back in the 80s.
Yeah, I love Terry Sweeney. Yep.
And so I knew Terry and his boyfriend. His boyfriend actually went to college with me and stuff, and so I had known him forever and used to go pal around with them at Saturday Night Live because they were both writers on the show, even when Terry wasn't a performer. They were writers for two or three years before he went on camera. But he had this party, and Cassandra Peterson was there, and I saw her, over in the corner, and I went to Terry and I said, "Oh my God, you know Cassandra? I'm a huge fan of Elvira. You've got to introduce me." So he went and introduced me and said, "Sam just directed a film called Guilty as Charged." And Cassandra went, "Oh, I just saw that movie. I loved it, and I've been wanting to meet you because if I ever do another Elvira film, I want to consider you as the director." And that's how we met. And so we've been friends ever since and have a lot in common. We're both redheads. We both are seminal, both are huge Vincent Price fans. The first horror film she ever saw was House on Haunted Hill. The first one I ever saw was Pit in the Pendulum. And, they just were seminal things in our childhood. And so, it's just kind of amazing when we start talking how many things we have in common. And I sometimes feel like we were separate.
And those are the best kinds of friendships that you can have. Something where you go back. Cortland and I know each other 30 years. Joe Franklin.
Yeah.
I know Joe Franklin for God rest him, for a long, long time before anybody. When he was doing his late night show, but even before, a little bit before then. But those are the best friendships to have, that where you have so much in common. And Cassandra seems like such a wonderful, wonderful woman.
She really, really is. And I just love her to death. And we've remained really close. I literally was at her house on Sunday, and we went out to dinner and stuff. I mean, we're just in touch all the time. It was terrible during COVID. Couldn't see each other for so long, but I'm so happy for her. And for those people who don't know, her new memoir is out, which is the best memoir I have ever read. I swear to Godzilla, this is the most incredible memoir. And she holds nothing back. I mean, there's no holds barred on that. And she also comes out that she's been in a relationship with a woman for 19 years. Everything is talked about openly in this book. And it is number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list of all books. This isn't niche category, guys. This isn't like horror host books, or anything. This is all books. And number 4, I mean, I was joking with her. I said, we already had your tombstone made, and it was going to say Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. Elvira. And now we've had to cross out Elvira and put New York Times best-selling author.
I'm so happy for her and her partner.
Awesome.
That's great, great,
so
great news.
I do need to ask this question, okay? And I know you and Elvira have been friends for a number of years. She writes this book, and she comes out as part of the LGBTQ community, and many people were shocked. Now, I would suggest that you've known that for quite a while.
I have known that for the full 19 years. Yes. She was very open about it with all of her friends and everything. But, you know, I think for all kinds of business reasons, there was a hesitation to make it public for a long time. But I will say this, and she very much wanted to be open about this and to come out about it, and had made plans to do that on several occasions over the last many years. And it just kept getting put off. At one point there was going to be a reality show, and she was going to reveal it on that. It was going to be a reality show about what it's like to be Cassandra Peterson, who has this character that she has to do. And, you know, the cameras were going to follow her around when she went on conventions and different appearances. But it was, you know, her partner Terry is her roadie and goes with her. Anybody who's ever met Cassandra at a convention has also met Terry, because she's always been standing by her side and running the table and collecting the money and all that kind of stuff. So it was going to be revealed in that reality show. And I mean, I don't think anybody's talked about this, but it was actually being produced by World of Wonder, that was the production company for RuPaul. And they made a short kind of teaser pilot, shot a few things. They shot at the Pink's hot dog stand in L.A., dedicated a hot dog to Elvira. I remember went over there and we shot some footage of that and a few other things that they made kind of a sizzle, what they call a sizzle reel. And they were presenting that to all the networks to see if they could get a green light to make that show. But nobody picked it up. So then it never happened. And then Cassandra was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just have to reveal this in my memoir. Well, you know, whenever somebody says they're going to write a memoir, they think it's going to take, you know, 5 minutes and it's going to be out in 6 months. And, you know, it ends up taking 10 years. And that's kind of it didn't take quite 10 years, but she's been writing this book for a very long time. And then it was supposed to come out. She got this huge, huge publishing deal with Hachette, which is one of the largest publishers in the frickin' world. And they were going to release it a year ago, but because of COVID, the publisher said, you're not going to be able to do any promotion. We are going to, and so they postponed the publication for a year. So yet again, Cassandra and T had sort of, you know, girded their loins for, you know, what it was going to be like to finally come out a year ago again, you know, and then they were like, oh gosh, we got to wait a year. So it's been a long time in coming. I know they're very relieved to finally, you know, have it out there, and very happy to have it out there. And you know, and to control the message in the way she wanted it to be. You know, it would have been horrible if it had been revealed, like, you know, in the National Enquirer or some, you know, thing. But she did it her way and her timeline, and wrote about it eloquently in the book. It brought me to tears. I mean, I got the audio book, which I highly recommend, because it's read to you by Cassandra. I mean, what better way? And it's unabridged. And I was listening to it in my car. And when it came to that part, and she just does this incredible, almost like a poetic love letter to her partner, I'm getting choked up now thinking about it. I had to pull the car over. I mean, really, it's really special.
Of the things that I've noticed from that is that the reaction has been extremely positive. And I find it interesting that for straight males and that sort of thing, who've always been interested in her cleavage and such and the persona, that there hasn't been hardly any blowback at all. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think that also reflects the society we're actually in, that it's much more accepting.
Yeah, thank you. And I really do think that it shows that we are in a more accepting world, and maybe it was a good thing that it took as long as it did for her to out with it, because, you know, I mean, believe me, she was nervous about what the reaction was going to be, but as she says in the book, you know, anybody who is not on board and isn't happy for her, well, I don't know if we want to say the word, but it's an F word.
Oh, yeah, you can say the word. Go for it.
Yeah, that's right.
And when she said that, I'm hearing her read the book to me and on the audio book, and when she says that, I cracked up laughing. It was like it was a great comic relief to the seriousness of what she had been talking about. But it's so true. It's like, you know, anybody in this day and age who isn't accepting of the LGBTQ community, you know, who needs them as friends anyway? I mean, we pick and choose our own family as it is. And, you know, I just don't have time for people who are bothered by that, especially now after all these years and all the chances that people have had to become enlightened and educated about the situation. You know, back in the dark ages, sure, people were uneducated about it. It was so much in the shadows. You know, it took people a minute. It shouldn't take them a minute now. It should take them half a second to wrap their head around, you know, kind of any kind of coming out. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there has been something negative out there, but honest to God, I have not seen it yet. So somebody pointed out to me, but I mean, I've just been really thrilled that there hasn't been much of anything, and certainly nothing that's meant anything.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was watching, there was Cassandra was on like a news program because she was doing all these interviews about her coming out, and one of the things she said that we just mentioned was that she was frustrated with Elvira, the character. It appeals to really men, appears to, I guess, boys, really. And I think that's what she was trying to say. How would she not reinvent the character, because the character doesn't need to be reinvented, but you know, that was, I guess, a hurdle for her to proclaim that, you know, I'm out there now.
Yeah.
And but I think, like you said, if you're bothered by that, I mean, there really is, in this day and age, we're bothered with everything. Everything bothers us. And it should and shouldn't be, because it's a family. And I've been part of that family in my family so many ways. I've known so many great, great people, and they're my inspiration. My dad's my number one inspiration, but my dad was inspired by so many people as well. To some people, it's not new. You know, it's nothing new to us.
Right.
Yes.
Well, the other thing that, you know, first of all, Elvira is a character. It isn't Cassandra. So there is the separation between the real life person and the character that she's playing. And so, you know, LGBTQ people who are actors can play straight characters, just like straight actors can play gay characters or whatever. And there is some controversy about that, but I fall onto the category, okay, if there's an ethnicity issue, you know, I don't think that white people should play, you know, black people in blackface. You know, I'm not in favor of that at all, but I think you're talking about sexuality, it's something I just don't see how you can tell actors that they can only play what their own sexuality. That just
sexuality doesn't define a person.
Whatsoever.
Period.
Right. Yeah.
Sexuality doesn't define a person. Person defines the person.
Exactly.
So, you know, so it is, you know, Elvira is a character, but also, you know, you were saying that, that Elvira, you know, mainly appeals to straight boys and men because of how sexy she is and everything. But also, let's not forget what an amazing role model Elvira is for women.
Yeah.
And actually for all people. And I will speak up as a gay man for gay men, because she is an outsider. She marches to the tune of her own drum, you know, and she does what she wants to do. She doesn't care. And I'm talking about the character, but Cassandra's this way too. But the character of Elvira doesn't let any criticism bother her. It's not going to change the way she looks. She's going to stick to her guns and go on with her life regardless of what anybody says. And that is an amazing empowerment for people who are oppressed and feeling like an outsider and feeling that they're not accepted. You know, she really has given people the courage and the strength to do things that they never realized or never thought they'd have the courage to do. And she gets that speech when she goes to a convention and there's a line of hundreds of people. More than half the people have speeches like that about how important that character was in their development and their maturity and their everything. And people, you know, people who aren't really, you know, major fans that just kind of, oh, no, Elvira is just this sort of silly horror host who's a valley girl, they're not fully aware, fully grasping the importance that this character has for the real serious fans that love her.
Right.
I would also add, or at least amplify something you said. The outsider doesn't have to be just gay. The outsider can be handicapped. The outsider can be anyone.
Any person who feels like they're not fitting in, and we've all felt that way at some point in our life.
Yeah, I was a big outsider.
How was I?
Really?
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And the only groups I felt comfortable in, and I'm talking from like, you know, 8, 9 years old, 10, were monster kids. And I remember specifically certain teachers and certain family members telling me that, you know, I'm going to grow out of all that and, you know, get a 9-to-5 job and forget about all the spooky stuff. And, you know, it goes back to what I
was saying.
Yeah.
I totally went through that. I mean, no one took me seriously when I was a kid. And, oh, it just drove me crazy. Well, you know.
Oh, it drove me crazy. Unbelievable.
Well, I have to say something here, too. I was, you know, I had an illness. I had cerebral palsy, which I still do. And I was in braces until I was 8 years old. And for many, many years, it was very apparent that I had problems. But one of the people that really, really influenced me was a gentleman by the name of Richard Wandel. And Rich and I are still friends. I just talked to him a week or so ago. But Rich was in my small hometown sort of escaping everything that he had done in previous. And he was the second president of the GAA. So you have this very out gay man in a very, very small homophobic town. And suddenly with that and with the theater group there, I felt they're all outsiders. They're like me. Even in a small town like that, you can find people that influence you. And of course, Rich and I, you know, we had a small affair. It didn't really work for me. But it didn't matter because he had such an influence on me. And the understanding of what you go through, you know, whether you're gay or whatever the case, as an outsider, that we're all the same in many, many ways. Because
in
we've
so
all
many ways.
Dealt with that feelings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we are.
Big part of the LGBTQ community who worships Elvira are drag queens. And it's because Elvira is kind of a drag queen herself. and they love her. And she's been a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race several times. RuPaul is a good friend of Cassandra for many years, and her first movie, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, is one of his top 10 favorite movies of all time. He always quotes the line from that movie. Whenever he runs into Cassandra, the first thing out of his mouth is, "How's your head?" And she responds, "Well, no one's complained yet." And that line from the movie where when the hunky guy that Elvira has the hots for is changing the letters on a marquee on a ladder, and she comes over, and he accidentally drops the letter on her head, and he comes down, and he's like, "Oh, no, I'm so sorry, Elvira," and he comes down off the ladder, and he says, "How's your head?" And she just looks at him and goes, "Well, I haven't had complaints yet." But that's become a catchphrase on RuPaul's Drag Race, and they even have a show that's starting up, and they've named the show "How's Your Head?"
Nice.
Very nice. Now I want to get back to the Blu-ray for a second. Who has released that, and where can we buy it, and all that sort of thing? Give us a little background on how the 20th century, the 20th anniversary edition came about.
Okay, well, because Cassandra produced and financed the movie herself, and she eventually, you know, had licensed the rights to a couple of different DVD companies over the years. It had a release in 91 and then another release in 2010. But she got when the rights reverted back to her, she had all the rights. By the way, this movie has never even shown on television, not once. Not on cable, nothing. So it's still this best-kept secret. Anyway, she had all the rights, and so she had her manager, you know, shop it around for a Blu-ray and had it in mind to do it on the 20th anniversary year and ended up getting a deal with Shout Factory, which is, in my opinion, the greatest thing that could have happened because Shout Factory has a division called Scream Factory, and they put out all these great horror films. Horror fans know them. They you know, are up on what releases are coming out. They do an incredible job marketing films. They also do an incredible job for us fan kids and monster kids and know that we want, you know, great extras and we want the great package. And, you know, and so it has all the bells and whistles that everybody would want. There's a special edition that you can order from Shout Factory that comes with a poster. There was a limited edition that now I think is sold out that had the poster signed by Elvira, but I think those were sold out during the pre-order phase a while back. But you can still get the one with the poster if you want to order that from them on the Shout Factory website. And it comes in it's the regular Blu-ray case, but it comes automatically with a rigid slipcover at no extra cost. And they're going to be making the rigid slip covers for, you know, a while until they run out of those. And then after that, it'll just be the regular Blu-ray case. But for people who order this sort of the edition now, you'll get this rigid slip cover that has the new cover art that they did just for this release. And then if you're familiar with Shout Factory, you know, the on the Blu-ray case, the piece of paper that slides into the cover, that slides into the sort of clear plastic thing, you can reverse it. It's reversible, and you can have new artwork they've created. You can also reverse it and have the original poster art that we had for the original release in 2001, which is a poster that I designed based on the Pit and the Pendulum posters, an homage to those. And we've got the great cheesecake artist, Olivia de Berardinus, to do the artwork. And it's incredible. It's this great portrait of Elvis with the Pit and the Pendulum. And it's, you know, it's really fun. So the whole packaging is beautiful. I have, you know, people want me to sign it, but it's hard, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to send me the Blu-ray, and then I'm going to sign it, and then have to send it back to them, and it's a lot of, you know, mishigas. So what I do, what I've done, is I've printed up a photo card, full color on both sides, that have pictures of me on the set with Elvira making the movie, and a cast picture of me with the cast in Romania. And but on the other side, a picture of me and Cassandra that we took just a few weeks ago. And we're holding, it was actually a mock-up cover because we didn't have the Blu-ray quite yet, but Shout Factory already had the cover design. And so they did a mock-up cover for us. So we're actually holding the Blu-ray case. And it's on this, so I printed up these cards, and they fit perfectly inside the Blu-ray case, and there's two little clips, and I will sign to you, and I'm giving them away for free. I'm paying the postage for free to anywhere in the world, and all you have to do is private message me your address, and you will get one signed to you personally by me. And just go on Facebook or Instagram and find me, and then just private message me your address, and that's all you have to do. And you can pimp out your new Blu-ray with this extra little card to go in there. And and as far as the extras, we've collected all the extras from the two previous releases, and there's a ton of them. There's a great audio commentary that I did with Cassandra and three of the other actors in it. Scott Atkinson, who plays Dr. Bradley, Mary Shear from Mad TV, who plays Lady Helzebeth, and Mary Jo Smith, who plays Zuzu, the French maid, and it's a great video commentary. We've got two documentaries on the making of it. We've got a whole thing of where Cassandra's gone to Romania and was scouting locations. There's a documentary on that. There's it's all kinds of cool stuff. And we, just a few weeks ago, I co-wrote and co-directed a 5-minute comic introduction that Elvira does for this release. And it's a really cute little thing where she's in front of her red couch and all her Elvira drag. And it's a fun little thing. So she and I wrote the script together, and then a guy that normally shoots her things, I co-directed it with him, and his name is Jim Coons, who's great, and it's a cool little, you know, little special thing to have on here. And I swear to God, people are going to see how incredible she looks, and they're going to think we had this, we shot this 20 years ago, and we've just had it in a time capsule this whole time. But no, we shot it a few weeks ago. And she looks like a trillion bucks. She never ages. It's incredible.
That's it's funny because when I watched the photo you posted where you're prostrating yourself to on the to Cassandra, and you said Cassandra Peterson is at 40. She's 40 years old.
Yeah. Well. Actually, yeah. Referring to is that the Elvira character
was created in 80, and
Cassandra herself barely looks, you know, older than 40. It's truly amazing. But this year, there's so many milestones. This year, Elvira is 40 years old. Cassandra turned 70 last month. I mean, I can't even wrap my head. number. It's so ridiculous. She does not look 70. And
no.
And it's my 30th anniversary of being her friend. It's the 20th anniversary of Elvira's Haunted Hills, and she's got her memoir coming out. You know, it is out, and just all these incredible things. And I should also mention that I did a huge interview with her for the Dark Side magazine, which is has the highest readership of any horror magazine going these days, way higher than even Fangoria. It's put out in the UK, but is sold all over the world. Yes. It's called The Dark Side. And it's in Barnes & Noble stores. The American stores lag behind about a month. So I don't think the magazine will be in Barnes & Noble till November. But it's out now. You can go online and look up The Dark Side magazine, and you can order it directly from The Dark Side. I've also signed a whole bunch of copies at Dark Delicacies, which is a store here in Burbank, California, and they have an online store where you could buy copies that I've signed. But it's a 13-page spread, full color, a whole ton of pictures, 10,000-word interview that I did with Cassandra just a few weeks ago, and it's great. It's really fun, and because we're such good friends and pals, it's funny and we tease each other. Half of the interview all about the making of Elvira's Haunted Hills, because we, you know, really wanted to focus on that with the Blu-ray coming out. And it's definitely worth getting a copy of that. And it's the Dark Side issue 222, and Elvira on the cover. So, you know, check that out. That's another thing to check out. It's a great companion piece for the Blu-ray right now.
Yeah. It looks super. I love the cover to that. The magazine.
It has a great artwork of Elvira on the cover.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta run, guys. Yeah, I gotta run.
Oh, okay.
I guess it's time for me to pass out now. And
Florence,
hopefully I'll feel
better tomorrow. Before you go, just give a little bit of information on your shows on Saturday and how people can get to them in the Haunted Barn and all that. Give us that.
Yeah, well, every Saturday night we do a show called Haunted Barn Live. You know, we got the administration changed at the chapel that we used to do our movies at. And we don't do that anymore there. So we can't go back there. COVID has really, really affected lots of the little things that we used to do. So we keep everybody together on Saturday nights with Haunted Barn Live. And it's on Google Meet at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And we do really like we just do retrospectives of some of the greatest fantasy films that you remember, and some films that you never heard of.
That's great, Joey.
Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
No. I just was saying you guys do an amazing job. Congratulations and more power.
Thanks, Sam.
Oh, absolutely.
We do it to keep everybody together, and we make lots of new friends. There's someone new joining us almost every Saturday. So it is nice. It's fun.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind is that you also have a Facebook page, Haunted Barn Facebook page, and definitely anyone that's listening, you want to check in on this. I also will tell you that Joey will PM me in the next couple of days, and we'll have Joey back for a commentary watch on hopefully one of the old Universal films or something like that. We haven't decided yet, but it is spooky season. So, Joey, you definitely have to be on and do a commentary. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. hopefully I'll be able to talk better than I can talk tonight, but I would love to. That's one of the things we do on Haunted Barn Live is we'll showcase a film like The Innocents, which scared me silly when I was a kid.
Oh,
one of you know, it,
movies.
Yeah.
Love them.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, or, you know, just the films we grew up with, the magical films for kids like Dinosaurus or Gorgo, things like that. So, yeah, so any Saturday night, Sam, I'd love to have you on one Saturday night. It would be 8 o'clock our time, but I would love for you to come on and you know, do a little talk for us. That would be great.
Oh, it'd be so much fun. And by the way,
yeah.
Everybody, Joey has he's raising his daughter right. Let me put it that way. He has an incredible daughter, Jessica. And I love
yeah.
Nick.
Otherwise known as Jesperatu, which I love.
I was going to say, love her nickname, Jesperatu. That tells you all you need to know, that she's been raised right, people.
Let me tell you, Sam, she would love one day to meet Cassandra. That would be a dream. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Everybody wants to meet her. You know, she does all the conventions. So we've just got to get her to come, you know, to Monster Bash again. She was at Monster Bash many years ago, but we need to get her there again.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, that's great. Well, anyway, thank you, Carl. Thank you, Sam. I love you guys. And
great to talk to you. And please give my love to Jesperatu.
I will. Thank you, Sam. Carl, take care.
Joey.
I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Yeah, and listen, take care of yourself. And you and Jess and everybody get better, okay? That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will. Okay,
right.
Take care. Bye, guys.
Okay, bye, Joey. So,
bye-bye.
So Sam, to finish up, you now have 20th anniversary edition of Elvira's Haunted Hills out, and I know you, okay? You don't sit on your tuchus. So what do you got going?
Well,
what are some of the projects that are happening?
Yeah, there's a few things going. I feel like the entire hour I've been a huckster for Elvira merchandise and Elvira related things. There is one more. And that is that Cassandra and I are hosting a tour group in Romania to go next May. We're going to take 40 people to Romania and show and do a tour of the locations where we shot Elvira's Haunted Hills, go visit the studio where we shot in the sound stages. We're also going to take in all sorts of Romanian, historical sites and just do, you know, the touristy things that you do when you're in Romania to places like Castle Dracula, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a 9-day tour, and you've got to check this out. There's a couple of places left, but it's almost sold out. And now they are talking about doing a second tour right after it. And Cassandra and I would stay and just greet the next group of 40 people that come over. So anyway, it's going to be really pretty freaking special. So if you go on my Facebook page, you'll find all the information of how to get in touch with the tour group people to see what the pricing and everything is. I will warn you, it is not cheap, but for those people who are able to swing it, it's going to be a lot of fun, and Cassandra and I are really, really looking forward to it.
Oh, nice, nice. Now, another thing that people may not know is that you're basically the Hallmark Christmas guy, and you do a lot of Hallmark films.
I do.
So do you have anything coming up on Hallmark that you're doing?
Well, I don't. I don't have anything for this season. I am doing. I am going to be directing an independently produced Christmas movie but it won't be ready for this year. It'll be ready for next year, and it might end up getting bought by Hallmark. The producers are very much open to that, but whether it's Hallmark or Lifetime or Netflix or whoever ends up buying it, or even if it just goes to streaming, it'll be out for next year. And it looks like we're going to start shooting in December. It's been postponed several times because of COVID and those issues. So we're still not 100% sure exactly what's going to be happening in terms of that toward, you know, December, but we're hoping we can get it going then, which would be nice because it's hard to shoot these winter snowy scenes in the dead of summer, you know.
Yeah.
We're shooting this one in Mississippi, and the schedule was going to be in the summertime, and boy, am I glad that didn't happen. So I'm really hoping it will happen sometime in the winter so that we can actually have people cold when they have on all their winter jackets and that sort of thing. So anyway, it's going to be great, and I'm really excited about it. I can't tell you too much about the plot, but if you've seen a few Hallmark Christmas movies, it's very much in that vein. The other thing I'm working on is that I'm writing when I was a teenager, I had a fanzine called Bizarre, and I interviewed about 40 amazing people in the horror world for the magazine. I've been to London twice and interviewed everybody from, you know, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, Ingrid Pitt, the great camera director, Terrence Fisher, Donald Pleasance, Diana Rigg, Jane Seymour, on and on and on. And all great directors and producers, and Michael Carreras and Sir James Carreras of Hammer Films, and Freddie Francis, the director. It's just incredible. So people have said you need to reprint those fanzines, but half of the fanzines are taken up with reviews that I wrote as a teenager, which I'm incredibly embarrassed by because my writing was terrible. My opinions have changed. So I don't really want to proliferate that nonsense. But these interviews are incredible time capsules. And so I'm collecting all of those into a book. And I'm writing essays about the behind the scenes of how each one came about. And there are some hilarious stories. And I'm getting Dan Gallagher, the great artist, cartoonist, who did my children's book parody during the pandemic called Sam's Toilet Paper Caper, all about trying to...
By the way, everyone should buy that. It's friggin' hysterical.
I'm glad you enjoy it. It's like a little golden book. It's in that style, like we all read as kids. And it's me trying to find toilet paper when there was, you know, the toilet paper shortage during the pandemic that made absolutely no sense. And it's really funny, and it's got all these crazy movie references and everything. And all profits go to the World Health Organization COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund. It's only $10. It's on Amazon. Sam's Toilet Paper Caper. But anyway, the artist who did the brilliant drawings in that, he's doing the cover for this book, and he's doing some cartoons and illustrations throughout the book of some of the funnier moments. Things like when I interviewed Christopher Lee, he was shooting Man with the Golden Gun. I got to spend the day on the set of this James Bond movie. And at the end of the day, Hervé Villechaize, who from, you know, Fantasy Island, to plane, that guy, he played Christopher Lee's sidekick, and I share a ride with them in a Rolls-Royce limousine back to London, and Hervé was drunk and telling us about all the prostitutes he'd hired for since he'd been in London, and Christopher Lee and I just started to crack. We were just cracking up, and, you know, just silly, you know, crazy things like that. Another one was when I was trying to meet Diana Rigg so I could interview her. I went to see her in a play, Pygmalion, on the West End, and I was just going to go to the stage door like I had done earlier with Vincent Price, you know, try to meet him at the stage door. That's what I was going to do with Diana Rigg. Well, I get into the theater. I hear this very familiar laugh right behind me. I turn around. It's freaking Vincent Price. And he goes, Sam, what are you doing here? Because he remembered me. So, you know, there's going to be a cartoon drawing about that moment. And so anyway, it's going to be a really, really amazing book. And I kind of look at it as my, as the memoir of my childhood and teen years as a monster kid. And I'm, you know, writing about how this whole fanzine came about and everything. And it really covers my life up through my teen years. And I'm calling it, I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, how I stalked, you know, Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and more. And so I'm working on that now. I was hoping to have it out by the end of the year. You know, we're still pushing for that, but there's a lot of work to do. And if I get sucked into this movie, it's going to distract me for a bit. So there may be a slight delay, but that'll be coming out, you know, certainly if not by the end of this year, early next year.
Okay. So I just want to clarify this for a moment. What age were you when all these interviews happened?
I was, when I did, well, like with Christopher Lee, I had just turned 18, and I started my fanzine when I was 15, and it kind of grew, you know. I only did one issue a year during summer in my school break. It was an annual thing, and it grew in size and printing quality. You know, with each one, it got better and better and more professional as it went along. And so, you know, and the way I would get interviews is that I would send, you know, I'd send a letter care of Hammer Films to, you know, Ingrid Pitt or whatever, and I would send the last issue of my fanzine, and I would say that I would love to meet you and do an interview, and lo and behold, they more often than not would say yes. And
okay,
so it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. And may I just say, I'm extremely envious. You know, to see that at 15 to 18, good.
Yeah.
God, man, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it was
pretty. It was, and just the strangest, you know, when you look at the how, I mean, oh, and by the way, the day I spent with Christopher Lee on this James Bond movie, The Man with the Golden Gun, it was that night that I ran into Vincent Price at the Diana Rigg play. And I mean, and then he took me backstage and introduced me to her, and she granted me an interview. She had me come back a couple days later. But I mean, all that happened in one day. Like, what? You can't even make it up. It's so crazy. No one would believe it. If it was in a fiction film, it would be like, oh, come on. But, you know, it happened, and it was all published in my fanzines way back then. And it's just, you know, I pinch myself when I go back and start putting the timeline together and going, man, I forgot that was on the same day. And it's wild. It's pretty wild.
You know, and the other thing, too, for our listeners, if they may not know, and I just want to bring it up briefly, is that you work with De Palma.
Yes. Right after I was doing the fanzine and everything, I went to – hold on one second. We have this terrible phone call. There we go. Right after I put out the last issue of Bizarre, it was issue number 4 in 1975, at the end of the summer. That fall, or November, I went to the Famous Monsters Convention in New York, and Joey was there, and Joey Vento, and also, you know, Cortland Hull, and, you know, it was the Woodstock of monster conventions. And I was, Ingrid Pitt asked me if I would be her aide-de-camp for the weekend, because we had become friends. And so I was working as her kind of assistant, bodyguard, escort, the whole thing. And she knew how much I loved Peter Cushing and that I had gotten to know him. And so she would take me to these VIP dinners because Peter Cushing was also the guest of honor. And she would sit me right next to him. And it was an incredibly charmed weekend. Well, I come back to school. I was a freshman at University of South Carolina after that incredible weekend. And I had already organized, before I even went up there, a Brian De Palma film festival on campus. And I had called and somehow they had put me through to Brian De Palma. And I had asked him to come out and appear at this festival, and he had agreed. So 3 days after this Famous Monsters convention, I come back to South Carolina, and Brian De Palma flies in, and I'm escorting him around to film classes and to, you know, talk at the film screenings of his movies and stuff. And that's where I met Brian De Palma, and that changed my, you know, that was another, you know, big thing that changed my life. And from then on, I sort of, you know, was sort of in the De Palma camp, and I ended up working on as his assistant on The Fury, and then I associate produced and production managed home movies with Kirk Douglas, and then became De Palma's full-time assistant and worked on Dress to Kill and on all the development and pre-production of Blowout. And then Brian had me go off and produce a small film while they were shooting Blowout. I was producing a low budget comedy that De Palma was kind of executive producing. And so anyway, that's probably going to be book number two, volume two will be the De Palma years and cover all of that. So yeah, that was my, you know, even though I went to film school in college, my real film school was working for De Palma, and it was what really gave me all the education I needed to become the director I am today.
Well, you should be very, very proud of what you do, and we're very, very pleased to have you and also to celebrate Elvira's Haunted Hills. And
thank you.
It's always wonderful to have you on, Joey. I mean, Joey, well, Joey, yes, but Sam, I'm sorry. It's been one of those days.
No, I'm always glad to come on, Carl. I love being on your show. It's really fun.
Good, good. So one more time, give us the pitch. Come on. You can do it one
okay.
more time, Sam.
All right. Well, just today, the Blu-ray of Elvira's Haunted Hills is now available from Shout Factory. You're going to love the film. Whether you know the Vincent Price, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies or not, it works perfectly well as a horror comedy, whether you know them or not. But if you do know them, there's going to be a lot of little inside jokes and stuff that you'll pick up on, and visual gags. And we designed the sets to look and evoke those sets and everything. It's just really fun. Yeah, so that's out. You also want to pick up the Dark Side magazine number 222 with my cover interview with Elvira, 13-page spread. And that's available from the Dark Side on their website from the UK. Or you can order that are signed by me from Dark Delicacies in Burbank. They have a website where they're selling it on the website if you can't get to their store. And it's also going to be at every Barnes & Noble in America starting in November because they lag behind about a month from the UK publication. And if you're in the UK or whatever, it's available now in stores in the UK. And you should definitely pick up Cassandra's memoir. It's called Yours Cruelly, Elvira. It is number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. There's an entire chapter on the making of our film, Elvira's Haunted Hills, that you wouldn't want to miss. And it's just an incredible book. It's the best memoir I've ever read of any celebrity. And you also want to consider getting the audio book and have her read it to you. It's just really wonderful. And then come with us to Romania next May on our Romanian tour. Cassandra and I are hosting 40 people, and it might turn out to be a second group of another 40, so 80 people. And you could be one of them. So, anyway.
Yes! Absolutely. You sound like Ron Popeil. Sam, it's so wonderful to have you. Thank you so, so much. I know you're busy and you need other things to do. And thank you for giving us the time tonight. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Carl. And thanks, everybody, for listening in.
Okay, so you can either stick around or go, Sam, because we're going to do a little bit of house cleaning here.
Okay.
We're going to talk about...
I'll take off at this point, but thanks again for having me, Carl, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Just let me know when you got something new coming and you're on. Not a problem, Sam. Thanks a lot for being on.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take care. So very, very quickly, just want to go into housekeeping on, so on Friday, we have Adam Ferenz is going to be doing the Cathode Ray Mission, and we're going to be talking about our favorite horror films and television. On Saturday, we're going to be doing a commentary watch, though we have not decided what that will be. Also on the 17th, which is next Friday, not this coming Friday, but next Friday, we're going to be doing the commentary watch with Roar. Doc is going to be with us. Also, we are planning to do some shows in conjunction with XV Planets and John Killian. And John and I will be recording a show on Monday, this coming Monday, on the Netflix series Midnight Mass. I also am going to be a guest on a podcast with Cameron Sullivan, who's connected with FB Film Forum. And that's going to also be on Monday, so that's going to be a very busy day with me. And we have upcoming shows with Scooter McRae, also with Scooter directed and a new 4K restoration of his film Shattered Dead is coming out, and it's a great film. You should check that out. We're also going to be having horror novelist Heath Lawrence with us. We're going to be doing lots of commentary watches, and everything should be set by the end of the week. Again, I want to give out a shout-out to Rachel, who had a slight emergency and was not able to be with us tonight, and just definitely keep her in your prayers and her family in your prayers. And we will see you on Friday, because I'll be with Adam on Friday. So we'll see you then. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Good night, everyone. Sleep tight, and don't let the bed bugs bite. All right? Good night, people.